There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my ass.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. Good to talk to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins as well. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's good, man. It's rodeo time.
Yeah, I figured you're going to be having fun down there on the water, and I figure Mrs. Sullivan's probably going to be having fun getting something nice afterwards, huh?
Right. Well, there's two ways to do this. You and I have talked about it. It's either the make the bad choice during rodeo weekend and then come out and see you at Mobile Bay Coins and pick something up, or you can be proactive and go ahead and pick up the gifts beforehand before you even go fishing and have them at the ready. That's kind of the way I like to do it.
Yeah, that way, as soon as you get done and you start to get that look, you have a way of sort of diffusing and deflecting that look. And you know, after consideration of the fact that I've been divorced a million times, and you've been married for so long, I've definitely come to agree with your ideas there, Sean.
Well, good. I'm glad you do that. Yeah, we'll call it the emotional first aid kit. You pack it full of gifts from Mobile Bay Coins, and you're ready to go.
Hey, I like that. That is I might have to borrow that from you, my friend. Yeah, the emotional first aid kit. And the thing is, that could be a really cool piece of jewelry. Maybe the missus isn't so much into the jewelry, but she likes Disney characters and things like that. We have some of those silver coins with Mickey Mouse or Scrooge McDuck on them. There are so many different cool designs and cool items here at the shop. I mean, we could take all day just talking about that.
All right. Give people directions to come out and check it all out.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. You can always call us at 725-1590. Or if you want to just sit at home and relax, follow us on Facebook. Look up Mobile Bay Coins there.
Hey, thank you, Angelo.
Have a good weekend, Sean.
Hey, absolutely. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins. And I just got done talking a bunch of different fish species with Dr. Sean Powers from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab. But I want to do this because Red Snapper ends on Sunday. The Alabama 2018 Alabama Red Snapper season ends on Sunday. Caught a lot of us off guard. I did an interview earlier in the week with Alabama Marine Resources Director Scott Bannon. He explains why. And let's go to that right now.
All right, this is some tough news. We knew it could happen, but news out as of yesterday that Alabama's red snapper season coming to an end this weekend. Of course, thank goodness it's this weekend and not earlier, because you have the 85th annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo going on this weekend with the snapper jackpot, the Crane Bark snapper jackpot going on, brand new thing for the rodeo this year. To talk more about this, Director of Alabama Marine Resources and my buddy Scott Bannon. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
So what would happen here, Scott? What I mean, all of a sudden, we were all looking forward to, you know, fishing through Labor Day weekend, and now you're telling us it's over Sunday.
Yeah, it was based on our harvest rates last year, on the effort that people put in. We actually probably should have gone past Labor Day, but this year, people took advantage of the relatively good weather and the opportunities to go fishing, and we actually fished at twice the rate we did last year. And when you do the math of the days, it cuts the season in half. And that's where we are based on the preliminary landings that were through the week of 4th of July. And under the exempted fishing permit, you know, we said that we would hold to the quota and that we would close it when we were expected to meet it, and to show that we can manage a state program. So that's why we had to end up closing a little early. I'm sure that nobody's happy about that, but hopefully people understand that we still got the fish the 984,000 pounds of fish that we had asked for.
Yeah, I guess that's worth explaining to folks, too, how these things are calculated. And I mean, I do like the fact that you are taking weather into account. Under the federal system, they just said it'd be this many days, and it didn't matter if we were having a tropical storm or whatever. They just assumed we fished the same rate every day. You did take into account in weather, and obviously we just had good patches of weather and people fished, but give us the top number, the allowable quota, and then tell us how you arrive at, you know, hey, we've hit the quota.
Okay. So we had the 984,000 pounds that we asked for under the exempted fishing permit. And each one of the Gulf states, we had to come to some agreement to reach the total allowable catch for the whole Gulf of Mexico. And so we said that last year we fished about 850,000 pounds or so. So we actually asked for a little bit more fish. And then we said we would use Snapper Check to monitor it throughout the season. And based on last year's numbers, we would get 47 days. We would make it through Labor Day Monday, give or take, with since we'd asked for about 100,000 extra pounds. So we actually anticipated a longer season. Well, then we monitor the effort through Snapper Check and through our surveys, and we measure the fish. We count the anglers that come in, and what we saw this year was the effort was tremendous. Now, the opening weekend, there was a little bit of rough weather.
Mm-hmm.
The second weekend, that weekend of June 9th, was probably the largest number of people I've ever seen fish since I've worked here in 21 years.
I could back you up on that. there were a bunch of folks out of Dolphin Island, for sure.
And our numbers show that we average about 700, 800 trips a day, give or take. It was about 1,600 trips that day. It was almost double the average effort. And so when you get those opportunities, I mean, we had 1,100 more people per day fishing than we did last year. So our mission to provide access to people, in a way, was a success. Lots of people went fishing. They just did not get to go, or won't get to go, the same number of days. But people took advantage of it, and I'm proud of that. I'm thankful that people got to go fish. Naturally, I'd like to have a few extra days. It is an economic impact to coastal Alabama. But at the end of the day, we agreed that we would close when we met the quota, and so we are obligated to do that. We'll sit down and look at the 2019 season.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second, but you mentioned the economic impact. We've talked about it in the past on this show. I put out some charts about the impact, you know, what it means for coastal Alabama when people are snapper fishing. But you gave me some numbers. Averaging, what, 700 to 900 trips a day, but that one day of 1,600 trips. Has there ever been a breakdown of just the average, you know, the average value economically to the state when somebody shows up at Billy Goat Hole and launches their boat and goes out and chases a snapper?
We have talked about trying to figure a method for that. We don't have anyone in-house with that expertise. If anybody in your audience has that expertise, we'd love to sit down with them and try and develop some numbers, because it is a hard number to track because you're looking at fuel, bait, hotel stays, meals, ice. I mean, it's a tremendous number of things, and so it is an impact. We definitely understand that. But we're looking at a long-term goal here, is that we showed that we can manage the fishery under the state, so that as a long-term goal, we get a little bit more opportunity to manage it and maybe look at the numbers. You know, we're working to a pound. I don't particularly like that. I wish we were looking at numbers of fish, because the average size fish this year, in our preliminary numbers, it's almost 2 pounds. It's 1.7 pounds larger than it was last year. And so that means that you're actually going to catch fewer fish to reach the pound.
Right.
I would still like to work to a number of fish.
Well, let's talk about this going forward and looking at the 2019 season. I appreciate your time this morning, and I'm happy at least we get this through the end of the rodeo, Scott.
Yes, absolutely, and I hope people go out and have a good time, and I'm excited to see some big fish on the board.
Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, joining us, so there you go.
All right, big thank you, Dalton, for bringing that back up. So that happens on Sunday. By midnight, we will not be able to retain Red Snapper. But yes, we get this last weekend and this big run here through the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and that is the good news. Also, if you're on your way down, maybe you want to stock up, and I'm not talking about live bait, I'm not talking about squid, I'm not talking about cigar Carbonos. I'm talking about maybe some great craft beers, maybe a nice bottle of wine, some spirits, or you want to stop by Cottage Hill Package tonight for their event with Props Brewing Company. They're out of Fort Walton, right, Dalton?
Yeah, Props Craft Brewery, and it's actually really cool. They're a veteran-owned, veteran-operated craft brewery, and they're doing a free tasting tonight at Cottage Hill Package Store, and that, of course, that's at the corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, but they're going to have three of their 14 Gulf Coast-made craft beers, including the Blonde Bomber Ale, the Flying Coffin IPA, and Dos Pilotos Mexican Style Cerveza. All of that tonight at Cottage Hill Package.
All right, good stuff. So check that out at 6, and when you're there, maybe you want to pick up a cigar and some craft beer, something to bring to the island. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow or Sunday down here. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit. Come by and say hi. All right, coming right back, 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwick. Y'all stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, live from the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, live from Dolphin Island. Big fun down here so far. It's been a great afternoon, and I can't wait to see y'all throughout the weekend down here. So you'll see the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit. We're right up here on the street, front and center in downtown Dolphin Island. So come by and say hello. All right, it is that time of the week. Even though I'm here and Dalton is in the studio, it's time for 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwig.
Yeah, and I actually, the band... Not in action today. Maybe we'll hear the band in the second segment.
Okay.
Here.
All right. Just because I always wait on them. But no, let's go with it. So what this is this is the time of the week when Dalton, you bring out all those stories I missed. Lots of stories about freaky stories about people from Florida, animals, situations that are out of the ordinary.
Yeah. No animals. And if I'm reading this correctly, I don't see any Florida man stories this
what
week.
How do we do 6.5 stories without animals? Gone Wild or Florida Man stories?
Believe it or not, I was still able to gather 6.5 stories of crazy things that happened this week, even without Florida Man. I'm sure there's a great Florida Man story somewhere this week, but not in 6.5 stories. He did not make the cut. But we do start this week's 6.5 stories talking about a little bit of golf. Of course, right now, world's top golf stars are in Scotland competing in the Open Championship at Carnoustie. And turns out, Sean, they also like to play a little bit of golf in Australia. Of course, the most famous golfer coming from down under being Greg Norman. And I don't know if you saw this over the last couple of weeks, but the 63-year-old Norman, he was actually featured in this year's version of the ESPN's Body Issue, you know, where they have the completely nude athletes.
I stay away from those. Yes.
Well, apparently the shark deciding to show off his golf swing while completely nude has started a bit of a fad in Australia. So last Monday, it was just 2 weeks after Norman was shown posing in ESPN's Body Issue. That's when an Australian nudist couple by the name of, his name's Bruce Jensen, her name is Julie Jarvie, and they hosted the first Wandering Bears Nude Golf Day. And listen to this. They held it at the Humpty Doo Golf Club. The name of the golf club, Humpty Doo.
Or maybe Humpty Don't.
And Jensen, of course, this isn't his first foray into some nudist activities. He owns the nearby Brujol Nude Retreat, evidently. And he's a regular player at the Humpty Doo, as it so happens. He says he picked this course in particular because he realized that the relatively quiet setting would be the perfect place for a skins-only tournament. Just skins.
It's a skins game.
That's right. And it required bending of the club's relatively traditional dress code. So I guess the dress code traditionally reads, members and visitors are required to maintain a standard of dress considered to be in keeping with both style and neatness according to the character and standing of the club. Neat and tidy attire at all times. But this Jensen guy, he must be a good negotiator, because he spoke to a couple of the club members, and after that he received permission to host dozens. There were dozens of people who showed up to golf in the nude, but it was all under one condition. They had to stay clear of the seventh and eighth holes because
what happens there?
They're just so close to the clubhouse. I guess those two holes.
When they made the turn, yeah, they worried when they make the turn, what might be seen.
And I guess they're planning on people still being in the clubhouse while this new tournament took place. So they said you'll have to go straight from hole 6 to hole 9, skip hole 7 and 8, and they even set up their own nudist clubhouse. I imagine they put a tent out there or something, so they could have a clubhouse at the turn. But Jensen said he was he felt like this first event was pretty successful. And the one quote they have from him in the story, he says, "Everything is swinging when you play golf nude."
I was waiting for something like that.
He had to take it there. Now, Sean, I can understand the argument for nudity in most situations, but golfing.
You can? Okay.
Yeah, I don't get the golfing. Golfing in the nude does not seem like a good time for me.
Well, the thing is, too, what I would worry about mostly is if I was playing after them, you know, what do they do to the seats on the carts, you know, after they, did they maybe wipe them down? How they get that straightened up?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they had to have a push cart. I'm not sure. And
did
you know,
they walk the course or did they ride?
You got to be careful once you finish each hole. You know, if you once you bend down to get your ball for the next next play, you got to be very careful. Pick your playing partners wisely. That's all I got to say.
There you go.
All right, story number two here, and this is a promising story that I came across this week, and I only say it's promising because it involves a study that proves that a saying I've heard frequently throughout my life, I know you've probably heard it too, but now I know for a fact this saying is not just a myth that's been passed down for generations. Turns out it's actually true. So let me read the story to you, okay? The University of Pittsburgh, they found a link between alcohol and perceived physical attractiveness.
Oh, yeah, the beer goggles theory.
The beer goggles. They've finally done a real study on this, and they found that beer goggles are indeed real. That's good news. I've been hearing about it my entire life. So these,
I could have told them that.
Yeah, I mean, just from, you know, standard weekend use, I guess you figure that out. But these researchers here at the University of Pittsburgh say they looked at data from 1,800 people that had been collected from 16 previous studies. And during those 16 tests, participants rated the attractiveness of people in photographs. So these weren't live people walking around, but they had half of the participants, about 900 people, drinking, the other half stone cold sober. And it turns out the intoxicated group gave higher scores in the photographs that they were judging, and they say modestly higher scores here. Still don't know the exact reason for that link, and the study did not attempt to determine how alcohol affects the brain to make people appear more good-looking, but there's a good chance the findings are related to human bonding, they say.
And human bonding. Yeah, well, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all that it's about. They say previous research shows that humans prefer to be around attractive people, and that's because a pretty face stimulates our brain's reward centers. I guess it gives a shot of dopamine when you see somebody with a pretty face or pretty something. And studies have also found that alcohol helps people form connections with strangers. I think that's something else that we probably could have figured out without this study. A psychologist who was the senior author of the paper, Michael Sayette, he said this newly discovered link might have evolved to facilitate socialization. He said, quote, "It suggests yet another way in which we bond is to experience them," meaning other people, "in a more attractive fashion physically." So that proves it. When someone blames a bad decision on beer goggles, maybe don't make fun of them, but show a little bit of empathy, because it turns out beer goggles...
The empathy. Yes, empathy for the beer goggle guy.
You have
to.
Now that we know it's a real affliction, beer goggles are indeed real. University of Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay, wait. If it's a real affliction, then the next thing you're going to say, somebody's going to have some kind of... it's going to be coded in the medical stuff, where you'll be like, well, you know, they... They didn't mean to. They have this condition, and you know, it'd be like, "Hey, I'm sorry, honey, for what happened there, but I have a condition, a beer goggle condition."
Yeah, I mean, it's been used as an excuse for ages, and now the smart person, before they use this excuse, they would now have the research to back it up, so they can point to an actual university study and say, "Look, I'm not wrong. This is a real affliction."
So, there you go.
There you go. All right, story number three here, where we find out that even trying to do a good deed sometimes can backfire. I got a story out of Thibodaux, Louisiana that proves that. So, you know, all the time on social media and in the news, we see that police departments and sheriff's departments, they have these warrant days where they say, all right, here's the day to show up.
Right.
If you have a warrant, we'll go ahead and take care of that for you. Well, this one guy out of Thibodaux, Louisiana, according to the TV station WGNO, he went out on a limb and I don't think they were having one of these show up and have your warrant cleared days, but he wanted to call ahead and figure out if he did have any active warrants out for his arrest.
Okay, yeah, all right, proactive. Okay, yeah. Okay.
The problem here, though, 24-year-old Christian Palacios, he made that call by dialing 911, which turns out not what you're supposed to do, even if you're trying to figure out if you have any active warrants. He made the call just after 10 o'clock at night on July 16th, and officers asked him. They asked him if he knew the difference between an emergency call and a non-emergency call. He said that he did realize the difference, and it turns out he did not have any warrants then, but now he does, because police departments charged Palacios with unlawful use of the 911 system. That violation carries up to a $500 fine and as much as 30 days in the parish jail.
You know, you hear these stories all the time of the people that use 911 for, like, to go, you know, their cable's not working or they need somebody to go get them a pizza or something like that. Maybe some system where the 911 operator could send some sort of shock back down through the phone. When the person does that, they could press a button and it would shock them. You'd give them just a little shock to reinforce not to do that again.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Or, I mean, why don't we change the non-emergency numbers around the nation? Maybe just like 9111. So just one little
one.
Add a few more ones, and that way it's not so hard to remember the non-emergency number. Because I can tell you right now, if I just needed to call the police department, I'd probably have to Google it. I don't have it in my phone. I don't have it memorized on the top of my head. But at least I know better than to, you know, call 911 for something that's not an emergency. Evidently, Christian here out of Thibodeau, Louisiana, did not realize that that was the case.
There we go.
All right.
Cautionary tale.
Here's another cautionary tale. So I'm always telling my wife to be careful when she's, like, shopping in the produce aisles at the grocery stores. And I'm usually just joking with her, telling her to watch out for snakes and spiders and, you know, other critters that might be attached to the vegetables or fruit. Now, though, it turns out I might have actually been onto something. So, story out of Branford, Connecticut. A woman says she found a black widow spider in a package of grapes from the grocery store. Says she bought the organic grapes from a Stop and Shop on Monday morning, and that she and her 11-year-old son were eating the grapes together when they found the black widow spider. She says the venomous spider did not bite either of them, and the store actually offered her a full refund. The grocery store, like they always have to do with stories like this, they actually had to put out a statement, and they said they take all necessary measures to keep spiders out. Believe it or not, Sean, they're not trying to kill you with spiders in the produce, but it's possible for them to get in because they are, quote, part of the natural organic environment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, if you think you're going to be able to buy organic or, you know, locally sourced produce and never have a hitchhiker, I think you're foolish.
Yeah, but you know, I've been shopping for a long time, haven't seen one. Now I know.
Well, you haven't seen it. Doesn't mean it wasn't there.
That's a good point. We'll come back, more 6.5 story.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Dauphin Island for the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. I got Dalton in studio. And we will continue our discussion of 6.5 stories in just one second. I do want to remind you, you're looking for dinner for tonight. Maybe you're doing a late lunch today. Maybe this is your normal lunchtime. I'm not here to judge. I am here to make a recommendation, and that is Goldfingers. Two locations of Goldfingers locally, although the Goldfingers started and in the Dothan area. There's locations all over that part of Alabama. Now in our area, here in Saraland, and the location I go to on Dolphin Street, pretty much just east of 65 and west of Sage. And they are on the south side of the road there. If you go by, they're near our friends at Jersey Mike's, too. And if you go by Goldfingers today, you can get maybe one of the platters. They have these great, great platters, not only with the great chicken, but also you can get the sides. You can do like a chicken fingers and chicken wings and get some sides and pick that up and take that home and just put that down for Friday night dinner. Let everybody rip up on it, and your work is done. Nice thing is, too, if you want to mix it up, they've got salads, hamburgers. They also have those wings, and they have those chicken fingers grilled, not just fried. Now, the fried are fantastic, but if you're doing like me, trying to do a little bit better with your eating, the grilled is really, really good. A lot of places you'll go, the grilled, it's on the menu. You go to a place that's kind of famous for, you know, fried chicken of some sort, and then you go, okay, I'll get the grilled, and then you never do it again because it's bland. That's not the issue at Goldfinger's. Tastes fantastic. Make sure you check them out. If not today, do it over the weekend. Stop by and get one of those platters or pick up lunch for yourself and your friends. Maybe grab some, bring it down to the island this weekend. All right, let's get back to it. 6.5 stories with Dalton Norwig. No fanfare?
Ah, man, I don't know what's up with the band today. They're just
the
not
the band
on.
Is really, maybe the band's already, maybe the band's fishing. Maybe the band's fishing for the first day of the rodeo.
That's exactly what it is. They're out on the water right now. They're probably actually playing that theme, the 6.5 stories
right,
theme
just,
out
right,
there.
We just can't hear them. Yeah, no. We just can't hear them from here. All right, so 6.5 stories, yes.
We are on story number 5 now, and I don't know if you remember, a couple weeks ago we were talking about the Guinness Book of World Records, and one of the questions you asked then was, do they still print the Guinness Book of World
Records? Yes, that was a question.
I never answered your question then, but I did Google it. I did find out they still do, because right now on bookshelves you can get the 2018 Guinness Book of World Records. I'd imagine if they're not already in there, we need to try to get the rodeo, the fishing rodeo in there, because isn't it the biggest?
Yeah, they are in there. They are in there, and it was like 4 or 5 years ago when it was actually certified. They had the guy from Guinness show up and actually sit here, and they had to have certified, and they showed the number of anglers, and they do all the documentation. So it's a thing. It's a real thing that the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo is the planet's largest multi-day fishing tournament, and it's happening right here in our own backyard, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm, pretty cool. Hometown stuff.
Well, I don't know if you remember looking through that book. I do remember being in school, and one of the images that was in Guinness Book of World Records, it would always gross me out every time I'd get to that page. Do you remember the guy with the world's longest fingernails?
I do.
Yes.
Even before you said it, I knew that's what you were going to say, because that picture still haunts me.
Yeah, it's always been disgusting. But I guess now that man, who for so long has been the world record holder for the longest fingernails, and he only had these fingernails on one hand. So the other hand, he kept them clipped. But on the one hand, he had the world's longest fingernails, but no longer. After 66 years, he cut those fingernails. His name, Sridhar Chilal. And if you're wondering...
Oh, of course it is, yes.
If you're wondering if he just, like, threw those into the nearest dump or what he did with those fingernails, turns out they put them on display at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in New York. That's where they're going. They measured him before he cut them off, and this guy's 82 years old now, but he's been growing them for 66 years. They had a combined measurement. They combined the length of all his fingernails, came up with 358 inches.
Oh, man. You know, the thing with that, people grow stuff, you know, I'm famous for, I'll grow a beard, shave it off, grow a beard, do things like, people, you let your hair gets a little bit long, and then, you know, you're in your 20s, you go, oh, I'm going to go for the long hair look, and you let it go long, and then you cut it off and all that, but how do you pick fingernails for the thing you're going to let go? Like the beard and the hair, that's one thing. But how do you go, you know, I'm just going to make my hand where I can't do anything with it, but drag this a bunch of nails around with it. Just how do you pick that?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. He actually provides answers here for why he began growing out those fingernails. And before that, his thumbnail was the longest on his hand, 78 inches. One nail, thumbnail, 78 inches. He says he's stopped trimming the fingernails back in 1952, and I mean, I guess this is as good a reason as any. He said he started not clipping them because he was told off by a teacher for messing around with a friend, and when he was doing that, he accidentally broke the teacher's nail. So she said to Chilal that he would never understand what it takes to take care of long fingernails, and then apparently that spurned him. Yeah, he basically went, oh yeah, I'll grow my fingernails. So he dedicated his entire life from that day in 1952 to taking care of the fingernails on, I guess, just one of his hands. He said, quote, when I realized that after cutting my nails will be at Ripley's Believe It or Not, and they're going to maintain them very nicely for a lifetime, then I felt like I was doing the right decision. Which, he says maintain them, but the pictures I've seen of his finger, they don't seem very maintained. It seemed like the opposite. Like, he's just been growing them, not maintaining them.
I don't know how you maintain them. I mean, like a nail file, you would need like a bench grinder or something like that.
I can't imagine. Now, I don't want to say this, but I will. How they smell.
Nails. You're killing me, man.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's like, this is, I don't know why, when you did it, I don't know why this bothers me so much. Very little bothers me, but this.
It gets me,
this
too.
Is, I don't know what it is, but this is bothering me.
No, it's right there with the pimple popping videos that some people like to watch. I can't stand that. But he grew these nails out in on his left hand, and he was so committed he even lost function of the left hand because of the weight and length of those nails, and it fused his fingers together since he was not able to move his hand because of the nails.
What's wrong with this dude?
I don't know, but that didn't keep him from having a 22-year career as a photographer for a government agricultural magazine. And this guy's also married and has two children and now three grandchildren. So, and
you wonder if you go back through those photographs for the government, you know, the government agriculture thing there, if there's just, you can see somewhere in the shot in the bottom left or right hand corner, just a ragged nail sticking up, you know, into the shot.
I bet there are Easter eggs in his photos where you can see the nail, kind of like the boom mic in some movies that's hanging out at the top of the screen.
But in this case, it's his nails.
Yeah, so there you go. An end to a dynasty. I guess they all have to come to an end. But I bet the happiest guy in the world today is that guy who's been sitting in second place for the world's longest nails for years.
He's I'm in.
Finally, it's my turn.
Technicality, but I'm in. Yes.
All right, story number six here. If you're anything like me, especially on Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, right around here, you probably think that drivers on South Alabama roads have to be the worst in the United States. I know I've thought it before, but a new study done by this company, Quote Wizard, proves that is not the case. According to this study, Omaha, Nebraska has the worst drivers of any of the top 75 most populated markets in the United States. So Mobile.
That's why all the insurance companies are there. Okay.
I guess
that's why
so.
They're there, because of the
maybe
all the claims.
It's all Warren Buffett. He's causing all of this. Maybe
the
he's
Oracle of Omaha is a horrible driver.
Putting the banana peels out there on the interstate. But Mobile would not have been in the top 75 most populated markets. One Alabama city was. I'll get to that in just a minute. But Omaha, they actually made the leap from 2017. Last year, they were only the eighth worst city, but they had so many increases in accidents, speeding and driving violations, propelled them to number one this year. And I guess they're so bad they even have a YouTube page dedicated to the worst drivers. Turns out four of the top six worst cities were out of California. Riverside came in right behind Omaha. Sacramento, California is the third worst. Columbus, Ohio fourth, and San Francisco fifth, probably those big hills they have there in San Francisco. And then of the 75 most populated markets, city with the best drivers turned out to be in Orlando, city in Florida. So Orlando gets the most best drivers, it turns out. I know. It didn't seem like
this
that is, when I've been this, there.
I'm going to blow this whole study up. I don't know about Orlando, but anybody who drives down to does a Disney thing with the family, from the time you get to where you get on 75 off of I-10 and then get down to Disney, do Turnpike and stuff, it is Death Race 2000. It is the worst. I mean, I-10, everything's fine. You turn off a little bit on 75, it's fine. And then you start getting down by Ocala and stuff, and people lose their stinking minds.
Well, I know you'll have an opinion on the second best city they have here. They say Miami. Yep. Miami second
horrible.
Best.
Horrible.
Horrible. Really?
Horrible. I have driven in that city a lot in my life. You've got people there. Okay, you've got a mix of this. You've got people, regular drivers. Then you've got people that are way too old to be driving. You can go ahead and send your complaints to the text line or my email. People that are way too old to be driving down there. And then you have a bunch of people that are new to the country in Miami, that have come from places, a lot of folks like from Central America, where the driving rules are, there's a little more gray to it, and then you mix all that together with also a guy who has sports car, who buys Ferrari Testarossa in a place that traffic keeps you from ever doing more than 35, but he's going to whip around out in the right lane and show you how he can Tom Selleck the Ferrari Testarossa. It is the worst. This is the worst list I've ever heard.
Ah, well, El Paso came in third, followed by Detroit and Little Rock. Birmingham, the only Alabama city that made it on the list, and turns out they did surprisingly well. They came in 19th best out of the city of drivers. So I guess that does it for 6.5 stories this week, Sean. We didn't get to number 6.5, but good reason. You're down on Dolphin Island for the Deep Sea Rodeo.
That's right. I'm sorry we ran out of time. Talking to Ed Rowett next. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll see you down here at the rodeo site.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back, and welcome back to my buddy Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino. And good to get you back on the show and lots to talk about. Although this one here, it was interesting to me because I was reading through an email you sent me. And I said, you know, Ed's, well, I've said this a lot, Ed's right about this. And it is the, this could never happen to me mentality. We exist in America a lot of times, look at all kinds of situations out there and say, wow, that's ridiculous because that could never happen to me.
Well, most of the folks that come see me, obviously it has happened to them.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot of negative opinions about injury claims and that sort of thing because people think it's never going to happen to me. So, you know, I've got a negative opinion about that. But then, you know, when it does happen, you lose your job, you lose your house, you know, or you just have, you know, extreme difficulties for months and could be years or could be longer than that, then it has happened to you. But the fact of the matter is that the statistics show that over 37,000 people die in road crashes here in this country every year.
Really, with all the technology today and all these things, and it's still that high?
It is very high. And I mean, the cell phones don't help, I don't think.
Right.
The cell phones are really causing more and more wrecks. But then you've got an additional 2.35 million, I believe it is, of people every year that get hurt or seriously injured. So the odds are, if you're going to get hurt, it's going to be on the roadway. So it can happen to you, and if it does happen to you, we're there for you.
But it's interesting you say it, because I think a lot of people will see something like that and see a claim for somebody being hurt on the road and say, that's ridiculous. But yes, your opinion on things changes when it's you.
Absolutely, when it's you, it is personal and it has happened. And that's why you should give me a call.
Yeah, and those are the people you see every day. And you rolling out the stats here, and you know, I've talked about this in the past, and you've joked with me like, you know what, Sullivan, I don't want to ever see you in this case. And thank you. You're wanting us to make sure we're safe on the roads. Do everything. Defensive driving. Heck, you talked about the defensive driving course.
Absolutely. Take a defensive driving course, and particularly for the teen drivers. I mean, I think for insurance rates, they have to take a defensive driving course.
But it's good for us older people, too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Driving defensive is the number one thing that you can do. I mean, you just see people on the roadway that I observe them, and I'm like, that's Russian roulette waiting to happen right there with that person.
So do everything you can. But yeah, I mean, you roll out the stats, even with all that, even with the technology we have today, and every year cars come out, there's more things to try to protect us, but still over 2 million people in a given year?
2 million Americans every year.
People go, play the lottery for odds, a lot less than that.
Absolutely.
So what do you tell people when if a situation arises, they get this injury, they got to come to you. I would imagine you want them to come to you as soon as possible too, because there's a lot of work that y'all do at Taylor Martino that needs to be done as quickly as possible, finding out information and all the due diligence.
Well, you can lose evidence in a case if you don't investigate it, if you don't have good photographs of debris at the scene, of damage to the vehicles, injury photographs. An investigation that's done early, you lose that evidence. Just like, if you didn't investigate a crime for months, you would lose that evidence, mm-hmm. and your conviction rate would go way down. Well, I'm basically prosecuting a civil wrong that's been done to somebody, and I want to make sure I have the answers, and I can't get those answers unless we really get after it early
on. Mm-hmm. And I think about the fact, too, that, I mean, y'all know what to look for that we don't. And if I've got an injury bad enough that I'm coming to see you, Ed, from this, then I physically can't go do that stuff myself.
Oh, absolutely. And the know-how is just like anything else. And I tell people, let's say I see a plumber. I would say, I have no idea how to do your job. Do you know how to do my job? And they usually say they don't.
Y'all come at equals there. Say, I don't know yours. You don't know mine, right?
That's right. Everybody's got their own talents and things that they do. And this is what we do. I mean, I've got over 20 years experience. Richard and Steve, over 30 years experience. And between the three of us, we've seen or done every type of case or situation that you can possibly see. And there's a lot of unique situations out there. And I hear about cases that don't ever come about or aren't handled properly because the attorney tries to handle something that's over their head. And that's mm-hmm. just a shame.
Yeah. And you know what? I've heard this before too. Y'all are like wisdom. Not saying there's nothing wrong with getting younger people into the profession. And there's always going to be young lawyers. But with wisdom, you have seen some version of this before, and you can give us wisdom to our case that in doing whatever we do, we don't even know this stuff, the backstory, the history, precedents.
Well, you know, we grew up together, so we know when we were younger and in our 20s, we thought that with age brings wisdom was not true, okay?
Right, I argued against that one.
And, you know, my 15-year-old and 12-year-old are in that camp right now.
Uh-huh.
But I tell them, well, it's going to take you 15, 20 years to find this out, perhaps, but what I'm telling you is the truth. And, you know, after that many years of practicing, that's the thing about practicing law, is that, you know, the older you get, really the better you get, as long as your health stays good. And so, you know, I've doing this for 20 years, you know, I've been in the trenches, I've been fighting, and I've learned a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine, just like that plumber that came to see you, he can do things with a quickness and knows that problem. He can diagnose that problem when he walks into your house. You can do the same thing for this situation that, you know, we're in, that's the worst day of our life just happened.
Absolutely. And just like I couldn't replumb my house, or I couldn't, you know, rewire it.
Right.
I couldn't expect the plumber or the electrician to come in and represent themselves. Right. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's great. That's beautiful. That's what America's all about. Let's all get together and make this country work.
I love it. People come see you. Let's talk about how to do that. If somebody's riding down the road right now, they may not be able to write everything down, but give them some search terms. You can Google these, or a phone number or something like that. What do they do?
The phone number is 433-3131 here in Mobile, and you can Google Taylor Martino, Ed Rowan, Steve Martino, Richard Taylor. We're the partners there at the firm, and you should be able to find us on the web.
All right, and remember too, folks, that right now you don't have anything to write with, you don't have it committed to memory, just hit us up here at the station. You can hit me on the text line or social media, or just email me, sean@fmtalk1065.com, and I'll put you through to my buddy Ed Rowan with Taylor Martino. Thanks for coming back in.
Thanks, Sean.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.